It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff. And today we are talking the conversation of what's wrong with you. Now, you know, it's very easy to point out the flaws in others, like, you know, like Jeff's gray beard. He's kind of old. He's got a really bad sunburn right now. But have we ever stopped and maybe point that mirror that we like to reflect out to everybody else back on ourselves? Jeff?
There was a thing I can hear my dad say to me, you know, that question, what's wrong with you? And he would say the word, you numbskull.
Well, that's probably better than it could have been.
He had some weird words he used. I've never heard anybody else use that.
You know, if you get in his head, it was probably like, you expletive, expletive.
Of course, I did something stupid. At least it didn't look stupid in my eyes, but in his eyes, it was like, what's wrong with you, right? Why would you do that?
He probably says, if I had a dollar for every time I had to tell Jeff that, I'd have retired 20 years sooner.
You know, I felt safe because I wasn't the only numbskull in my house. You know, I had siblings that were called the same thing.
That's fair. Well, you're not even the only numbskull at this table.
I think it's fair to say there's a lot of numbskulls today.
That puts it politely.
Yes. I think all of us, to a degree, if we ask the better question, not what's wrong with you, but what's wrong with me, is if we could just step back a little bit and look at our relationships and look at how things, we put oil in our cars so that we create less friction for our metal parts touching, right? So there's a thin layer of oil that keeps that metal from metal touching and creating very bad resistance and take and shave off those terrible pits in your engine that destroy your fuel economy and the life of your engine. There are lubricants in our relationships that make things easier or better. And there are those relationships where it's metal on metal and people are upset and there's friction and there's heat and people are mad and
nails on a chalkboard.
And typically most of us ask the first question, what's wrong with them? Why are they like this? Why are they making this so difficult? And we fail to see that maybe we're playing a part.
Yeah.
Small or big, but we're playing a part in that friction.
Sure. I also think, you know, there's the expression that a picture is worth 1,000 words and your eyes have told you one thing based on what you've seen. But then if you actually knew the 1,000 words to the metaphoric photograph per se, would those words line up with what your eyes have told you is said? Like, is that actually the case?
Apply that to yourself. You know, there's who we imagine ourselves to be. We think that we're...
This is our picture, our image.
Of ourselves.
Right.
I'm upstanding. I'm good. I'm good looking. Whatever it is that you imagine yourself to be.
Oh, thanks for piling it on me. Yeah. I love it.
And then there's how everyone else actually sees you. And so what you find is... our perception doesn't always match reality.
Hmm.
And also, there's sometimes what you think you said, and there's what others heard you say. So there's what you project and what you perceive that you actually said, right? It's like not always do they agree. You perceived it to be beneficial and helpful, and you can't understand why they're so upset because you hurt their feelings. But you said it so nicely and sweet, and you were just telling the truth.
Then they hit the playback. It doesn't quite sound like that.
Yeah, they go, and then they say, but what you said was, and you go, no, I didn't. They actually quote you verbatim. You're like, but that's not what I meant.
But yeah, it's what you said, though.
But it is what you said. But what I meant to say was, yeah, and listen to your own language. In other words, the image of who you think you are is not actually what you're expressing.
I think in fairness, too, with this digital age or era that we're in, I mean, we've been in for some time, but obviously it's just getting further and further to be a digital construct, is that I think we have lost a lot of communication skills because you're not face to face with people anymore. You're not having real conversations. You can type anything out in some words on a screen and send them. And a lot of times, I mean, you come across things on social media that you're just like, people would never say this to somebody's face.
I have a friend. We've not been able to talk in a while, but his youngest son was having a very difficult time with his behavior, just controlling himself. He just was not able to regulate his behavior in a way that you we should all be able to. And he's like, what do I do? He didn't want to put his kid on, the psychiatrist was wanting to put him on drugs.
So he didn't want to go on the medicine wheel.
Right. But he's like, I'm not really sure what else to do. I said, well, I don't want to say names here. I said, but your son, does he understand what he's doing? I know you're explaining it to him, but it's this very same concept. There's we all have those moments where we go third person in a situation where we feel like we're kind of like standing above ourselves and watching what's happening. You know, what really helps is, and it irritates people to no end, but people bring out that phone today and they record what's happening. Like, police officers really get mad when some bystander records the situation, because again, the cop perceives he's an authority, he's in the right. It's threatening when there's an independent eye watching.
Right.
That
he doesn't mean that he didn't necessarily take his authority across the line.
It accurately depicts
what actually happened.
Right. As opposed to how they perceive it's happening.
And I mean, that works both ways. It does. The person who's being accused also may perceive, well, this is my side of the story. It's what I did.
And then the video camera
says like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. The video camera says otherwise. So it does work both ways, but especially crooked ones don't like body cams or somebody else recording them, even at a distance, because they don't want there to be a challenge to their statement on things.
Yeah.
So what I said to this father, I said, did it ever occur to you at home when your son is acting out in these ways, of which he has, by the way, the son had no memory of the outbursts of the way he was behaving. He gets so worked up that he just would lose it and later go, it didn't happen that way, Dad. Almost like gaslighting, we call it today. Like, it didn't happen that way, Dad. I said, why don't you videotape him? Record him with your phone.
Right. You've always,
yeah, just not just a conversation. Get a video recording of this and then play it back to him when he's cooled down.
And then he's going to go, oh, whoa.
Yeah, you would have thought they would have leapt on that. But the mom was overly concerned and, you know, hypersensitive and would just do whatever the psychiatrist said. The psychiatrist wanted to do what?
Probably the medicine wheel.
Medicine. And they said, yeah, I think if you videotaped your son, it'd be very destructive to his ego. And
isn't that a good thing?
Well, yeah.
Shouldn't we try to destroy our ego?
Well, and what else to do? His security and his, what's the other the word they used? Self-esteem. It's a very fragile time for him. And I think it'd be dangerous for you to do that. He might become suicidal.
It'd be better if he just felt nothing.
Well, no, it's better for him to act out in ways that are not only disruptive to his life, but to everybody else in it, including his family, his school, which he's almost got suspended for.
And then when you become an adult, since right. no one's ever corrected these behaviors,
you never learn to regulate.
You do the same thing in society.
You never learn. You never learn to regulate yourself because in your mind, your narrative is true.
Which is, I mean, incredibly unfortunate, because then in some ways, you'd have to stop and think, is this person really to blame? I get it. When you're an adult, you are accountable for your own actions. But if it's all you know,
no one's ever taught you otherwise.
Yeah, you don't know any different. So that's where I'm kind of like, are you really entirely to blame? Because you've never been taught a different way.
Well, parents are supposed to be those regulators, right? They're supposed to be those people who come in and say, hey, look, you know what, buddy, I know you think this is how the story goes. Or you think this is your part in the story. But let me tell you something, buddy. You've gotten too big for your britches, and I'm going to take you down a peg or two. You know, we've all had to correct. Well, I shouldn't say we all, because not all have corrected. But there should be places where a parent corrects their child and says, no, you're in the wrong here. You're not the parent. You're the child.
Well, and think about just in all aspects of society, it seems like as parents, we've given up that duty due to busyness, laziness, and everything in between. At almost every turn, we've given that duty or authority to some agency to take care of and handle it. Just like in this instance, you have your friend taking their son to a psychiatrist, and I'm not saying there isn't a place for that. In my opinion, that's not your first stop, right? You should be trying to work and correct this problem at home before. I mean, you know, some people do have chemical deficiencies. Some people do need medication. I don't dispute that. But what I do dispute is that it's not everybody that needs that. And that seems to be the first alternative in that example is to, well, we'll just put you on some medication. You know, you can't sit still in your chair for 8 hours a day at school, so you got to have something wrong with you. Well, maybe it's just not how you learn. Maybe you're hands-on.
The real reason was that these parents had advocated their role. And
sure,
it was inconvenient to assume it again. And so they gave it to another, and this expert gave them a fix that would, in the short term, mask the problem but never resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
Now this child is super confused. They didn't need drugs. What they really needed was boundaries.
Sure.
Don't we all, though? We all need to know the 100%. Construct, yeah? The construct from which we're working within. And this person wanted to be able, this child wanted to be able to redefine the terms. Well, hello. Listen, we have a whole nation like this. Whether we're talking gender, whether we're talking right and wrong.
Dead or alive.
You pick the issue.
Yeah, I mean, terms are being redefined constantly.
Where does this go?
No, we're good.
They're legalizing drugs. And I wonder if it's not just to medicate the entire nation.
The drug issue, I think recreational drugs are now being legalized. But how many people already take a drug anyway?
Right, right.
That's... We view them differently because they're called prescription drugs.
Happy pills.
Are they any different?
The outcome's not, because if you read the side of the bottle, it says, don't drive while taking this drug, right? In other words, you're impaired.
Yeah. So how is that any different than if you were to smoke some marijuana or drink some beers? I mean, I get the substances are different, but how is the outcome any different?
I think what it is we've been told by an authority figure
that it's okay. Right.
Yeah. Again, we've advocated, and actually what we've done is we've taken away from God his role and gave it to another.
And haven't we all been, maybe not in this exact example, but we've all been guilty of doing just that in some capacity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it is more convenient. You can't argue with that, right? I mean, it's a quicker fix, even though it's not really a fix. It's a quicker pause to the problem. All right, I don't got to worry about this now for X amount of time until it flares back up again. I don't know how we get away from that, because our whole society is built on convenience, but nobody ever stops to think about what's exchanged for the convenience.
I think the solution, it's actually pretty simple. It's getting back to personal responsibility. And I think most of us would say, yeah, I want to grow. I want to be better tomorrow than I am today. And I want to be more whole. We all want to become our best self. We want to live the happiest life possible. And again, what that means is not just boundaries for us all, but also it means responsibility. And part of that, in the exchange, people, if you imagine it this way, everyone walking around in your world is holding a mirror. And sometimes they turn that mirror off of their narcissistic self, and they show you who you are.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's where you got to stop and go, wait a second. There was who I thought I was presenting myself to be, but what I perceived and what's actually happening is not the same. Who's responsible to fix that? The person? Do I just yell at the person and say, no, I'm actually this way? The issue is you. It's not enough for you to say, yeah, that's wrong. You got to fix it.
What if in terms of like people who were sent to prison or for punishment, what if that was your punishment? That you had to sit, like, let's say people who were on death row, for example, you, instead of being put to death, are put into a cell that every aspect of the cell is a mirror. So if you look up, you look down, you look on each wall, it's all mirror. So all you see as you sit there every day in solitary confinement is yourself.
If I were trying to, okay, I guess you got to ask yourself, what's the goal of prison? Is it to punish or rehabilitate? And I think that's where we're kind of conflicted as a nation. Maybe this would be a separate podcast. If you wanted to punish, I think today with our technology, one of the best ways you do it is to do nothing but the whole time you're incarcerated, you play clips from the news and only allow them to read things of what they did and how it hurt others.
So don't you think some people are just so lacking emotion and so full-blown narcissistic that it wouldn't really bother them?
Oh, I think you could easily, over time, even make a Jeffrey Dahmer care.
All right.
I think, but you have to isolate them. You have to, in other words, you're breaking them. Again, I'm getting into a sick place of punishment. You can do it.
Ultimately, don't they have some deep down hidden thing for why it is that they do what they do anyways?
Yes.
Like, well, don't they probably actually care if you hit that surface or if you hit that root issue?
Yeah, I think what you have to do is, it's kind of like when you exercise. Everyone's got, you know, certain areas where you're strong. You're trying to raise up the other muscles to a place where they match the others or even surpass, right? Sure. They've strengthened some actual part, a mechanism, part of us. Like, we got all have desires, passions, and it's not wrong for us to want to have a dopamine release. It's how you do it, right? And so there's natural things. Looking outside and watching a sunrise, you have a dopamine release and it feels good. But if you allow yourself to become promiscuous, yes, it still releases the same dopamine and it feels good, but it's an unhealthy lifestyle, not just for you, but for the people that you're doing this with. It's, mm-hmm. it's destructive. So it's finding positive ways to find that same release that not only edify and build you, but watching that sunset with your family, you all get to enjoy it together.
Builds others. Yeah. Right? I think to refer back to somebody like a Jeffrey Dahmer or anyone in those type of situations, remembering that they were once a little kid, right?
Yeah, child. Yeah.
They weren't born the way that they are. So that's where I kind of get into that deep rooted issue. I think they do care, but they've faced an experience that, due to lack of boundaries, it was never properly dealt with, or maybe several experiences, and this is what became.
Every child is self-absorbed, and part of the learning experience is to help that child become concerned not just for yourself, but for
others,
right? Mm-hmm. That's a huge lesson that used to be taught in school. I don't think it is anymore, but it was not only becoming self-aware, but understanding how your actions affect others.
I mean, once again, to refer back to the Bible, case in point, one of the main commandments, love God and love others as yourself.
Right. And do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And instead, people have kind of flipped that around and said, you do for me what I want you to.
And that'll be that.
And yeah. and I will let you live or be happy until I change my mind. You know, we've just kind of had these, again, weird inversions.
Sure.
Because in the end, we don't take responsibility for our actions, our emotions, what we even perceive and think about. We just allow any fleeting thought or pleasure or idea that piques our interest
to take over our mind. And
right.
And run with it.
And so when you have a society built on that moral, that value system, you don't get a better society or a better person. You get chaos.
Very much so. Compulsive.
Yeah. Yeah. So look at today. It's whether you're talking robberies to rape to drug addiction, all of these things have that impulsive part to it. Mm-hmm. We've all got wrong thoughts in our mind, but some people entertain them. Again, yeah. Personal responsibility. You're asking, you know, how do you fix this? I think it's again, it starts with the individual, not regulation and laws and whatever. It's each of us taking responsibility.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think your solution is a great idea, but how do we get
people to want to do that?
Well, not only just people, but ourselves to always want to forego convenience, like with acknowledging what convenience is being exchanged for. I mean, some things, not that we always have to forego convenience, I guess. Some things can be convenient. But to maybe take that deeper look every time and understand, like, okay, what am I giving up in exchange for convenience to want to go back and take that self-responsibility? How do we get ourselves as well as others to really buy into that idea and lean towards it?
I do think that beyond self, there's a hunger there. Again, like I talked about, do you want to be stuck? Well, most people would say, no, I don't want to be stuck. We want to grow. We want to have progress, not just in the things that we work on with our hands, but as our person, as we develop and grow. And so I think you start to feed that there. If you're a person who, in your relationships, you're finding there's a lot of tension, there's a lot of problems, maybe, just maybe. Maybe the issue isn't all the people around you. Maybe the issue is you.
If you're always in conflict,
yeah,
you're the common point in the conflict.
Well, you are, and so at least entertain the thought. Maybe there's some things that I'm unintentionally doing that are caustic to my relationships that I want to grow and have. And so how do I accept responsibility? I'll tell you how. Ask those you trust to be honest with you. Am I being nice in this situation? Are there things I'm doing that are hurting you? Ask vulnerable questions and shut up. let them speak.
But in our modern day, how many people does the average person have like that around them that's actually going to give them real truth versus, you do you if it makes you happy? I mean, just send you on your path to destruction.
I think if you don't have those people, you already know you're the problem.
Hmm.
We gravitate to people who enrich us, who improve us, who make us feel and be the better person that we are. If you don't have those people in your life, it's because you are caustic.
Mm.
And you will continue to be caustic because you live in a silo.
I think that's a fair point, though, because when I, you know, once again, before I was a believer, I used to kind of subconsciously tell myself, I guess, that in some ways, I'm probably the worst person that I know. Like, seriously.
That's terrible to say.
It is, but it's true.
But how so? I mean, why would you?
Because I would always surround myself with people that I knew had a better moral compass than I did, per se, so that I would be their influence. So to me,
you're trying to bring them down?
Not necessarily bring them down, but I would never want to bring them past the points to which I would go. And I knew that if I surrounded myself with people who were more like me, I was going to do things that I didn't want to do.
They were your safety. They were pulling you back.
Okay. They were more of a safety net for me. But yes, they were more of a positive reinforcement to me of like, man, we're not doing that. Or like, all right, we'll do that, but we're not doing that. And then like, all right, yeah, we shouldn't do that.
You tried to put a passenger next to you who would pull the e-brake.
Right, like to where I'm like, all right, I'm going to do me. I'm out here wild and crazy, but I know I got you next to me who's got these boundaries of like, if this gets too wild and too crazy, you're going to pull the stop.
When you think about it, I think that's probably true for a lot of people. What others who don't attend church don't understand is one of the things that we derive when we assemble in the building that we often call a church. The church isn't the building, it's the people. And everyone's united because we all see that we're broken. We all see that we have a need and we all want it. And we're pursuing it together, helping each other get there. Now, we don't do it perfectly, but we're trying, right? We're trying.
Well, what used to be great, though, was back in the day, that statement used to be true, but so many people were involved with it that it also spilled out into the country.
Right.
So although we may have, you know, slightly differing views or different ways in which we go about doing things, we all united under that one thing that you just described.
Right, right. Well, to some degree, a large portion of the makeup of our nation were attending church, right? They were believers and going out into the world. And what it kind of reminds me of is like those little kids' stars they have, like when you stick them on the ceiling of your kid's room and you turn the light on, and they absorb the light they're exposed to, and you turn the light off, and for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, they continue to glow in a diminishing way. In the same way, when you come to that assembly in the church, we're reminded of the light that Christ is and that we're called to be in this world. And the moment we leave, we begin to get dimmer and dimmer and dimmer, but we're still a light into that world.
And we're constantly returning.
Coming back to the light to be replenished. Yeah.
As we're starting to maybe dim out, right, metaphorically speaking, we're coming to get recharged once again by that light.
Right, reignited. And the beauty of this, and the cool part about this, is that the longer you attend a local congregation, you form relationships that you don't have to wait 7 days to go see again. You'll see them midweek. Well, between the two of you, there's a synergy there that exists where that same light reflects, because where two or more are gathered,
there I am.
Christ is there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really cool. You and I experience this every Monday, you know,
that's true.
There, you know, God is here. God shows up, and we see that in magnificent ways. And listen, not only in here, but through this podcast, people are deriving that same benefit throughout our week as we wait to get recharged on Sunday as the church gathers.
Hmm.
So yeah, personal responsibility. We're there because we accept responsibility. And we understand, yes, Christ paved a way for a sinner such as I to be saved, but there's a lot of things wrong with me that must be fixed. And I know that one day Christ is going to perfect me, but in the interim, I'm going to chisel away at what I can.
Yeah, I think that's hard for us to admit that it's a constant, like for the rest of our time here, we're going to be working on ourselves for improvement. A lot of times we get caught up in this, well, I'm already doing enough. I've already come this far. When's enough? And until we reach eternal glory, I don't know that it will ever be enough, right? Because we're never going to be perfect.
It's like mowing your grass. You go out there and you mow your grass.
But it needs to cut again next week.
Yeah, it looks awesome today. Mm-hmm. I just got it done. But even hours later, the leaves blow into your yard.
You haven't seen me run a lawnmower. You thought your yard looked good. Oh, man.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so you have to have a cleanup crew after you get done mowing. No, but that's our life. It needs constant maintenance. That's the best way to put it. We need constant maintenance until the day comes when it's set and perfected. Perfected and then set. That's the better way of saying it. We'll be perfected and then it's set. So we don't deviate from perfection.
We today have a very distorted view of, you know, to reuse your point of progress, of what progress actually looks like. So how do we, I don't know if we gather a new image of true progress or fix the picture of progress we already have. How do we understand actual progress?
The reason we're so conflicted and confused on that very topic is because we've lost our standard. And we argue about what the standard is.
There is no standard anymore.
Well, the standard has become ourselves. Mm. And as long as it is ourselves, then there's nothing for us to aim for because we already are ourselves. Because we're saying there's nothing wrong with me. And then one of the messages, you're fine just the way you are. You're mm-hmm. perfect just the way you are. No, you're not. That's a lie. But go around singing the song, but you're not perfect. Mm-hmm. You're not perfect. You one day, if you're in Christ, you will be, but you are, I assure you, you are not perfect. Give me 30 seconds with anybody and I'll find you something wrong with you. I mean, and listen, I got plenty wrong with me. My point is, not a one of us here on earth is perfect. But we can acknowledge that. Most of us who are sane can acknowledge that. So, okay, the reason we can say that is because there's a standard that is independent of us, right? So it's unaffected by us, but we can be affected by it. That standard is Christ. I know the atheist, I was there once upon a time, so were you, can argue all they want. Oh, you know, your religion's a crutch and all those things they want to say. But you can't argue the best our country ever was because we embraced the teachings Christ gave us. Mm-hmm. And it's what made this nation. By the way, the unmaking of this nation has been the rejection of those same teachings.
That's a fair point. I think one, honestly, that couldn't be argued, because you are exactly right that the standard, I said there's no standard, and you said the standard is ourselves, which, though in theory, I still would say illustrates that there is no standard, because my standard and your standard could be entirely different. And if I hold to mine and you hold to yours, there's no standard, right?
Well, what I mean is, in that statement, I'll clarify. If ourselves are the standard, there's nothing for us to aspire to because we already are that.
Mm. Okay. That makes more sense. Yeah. Because then obviously when we aspire to the standard of Christ, we are constantly improving upon the imperfections that we know we have.
Yeah, but that's the key. You have to recognize and acknowledge what's broke.
Because I think now we treat progress as it's your right to murder your unborn child, even though we would say if anyone else did it, if the husband or the father of the baby were to kill the baby while it's on your stomach, he'd be a murderer, but it's your right to do so. Or we have a standard of you can be a man and play in women's sports. That's okay, because that's what you want to do.
Yeah, right and wrong isn't a subjective feeling.
Yeah.
Right and wrong is an objective standard that is independent of us.
Absolutely.
And that's where we're just kind of stuck. And as long as we live in that place, we'll be stuck.
I totally agree with you. It starts with self-responsibility. And I also think it starts with putting Christ back in the place in which he belongs, which is at the center of our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does say, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And when you think about his way and his truth and the life that you will live as a result of following them, although it is a difficult one, I'm not going to say that. We all, like you said, have our desires and we all have our temptations and we fall short and miss the mark. But in following those ways and those teachings and those truths, could we live a better life than that?
I think people have tried and failed, right?
I mean, I know I did.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I think a lot of Christians today want to make Jesus their savior. They don't want to make him their Lord. And he's both. And let me tell you what that looks like if he's your Lord. You're surrendering not only your desires, but your dreams, everything to him, to embrace what he has for you, not so you can be anything you want, so you can be everything he has purposed for you to be. And I don't think that even most believers today live in that reality. They're trying to give God just an hour on Sunday as opposed to their entire life.
I'd say that's something I'm guilty of.
Well, in some ways. I think we've built a society on it, so that's the normal, right? So again, that's socially acceptable even in the church when it's repulsive to God.
I would say he calls that being lukewarm, right?
Yeah. Rebellious and disobedient, yeah.
Do you think in that context, having dreams or things you're drawn towards or called to, where would you say those came from in the first place? In terms of the faith walk is about surrendering, where would you say that you gathered those things that you had to begin with?
Well, that's a whole long discussion, but we're all the product of our upbringing. That's part of our discussion here. So, you know, if you've been taught since you could understand language, Tyler, you can be anything you want. If you can dream it, you can achieve it. If you hear that enough, it's called mind control. You'll believe it and you'll pursue it without conscience.
But where did the dream you had to begin with? We're all drawn and called to different things, right?
Well, so you just said it. There's parts of us that are broken. There's our heart. We again, if you were raised in an environment where you fed certain passions in unhealthy ways, and those are never challenged, you'll become a monster in those areas.
All right.
And you'll develop an appetite, and you'll pursue those appetites. Because after all, you can be anything you want. If you can dream it, you can achieve it.
These open-ended statements that sound wonderful.
Absolutely.
And in some ways, they really are if you have the proper boundaries.
Guidance and boundaries, right.
You can be anything you want to be if you dream it has now turned into you can be a different gender, you can be an animal, you can be a...
Well, Jeffrey Dahmer, he achieved his dreams. He became what he wanted to be.
But do you think he ever wanted to become that?
I don't think he was a 5-year-old saying that. I think that, again, there were unhealthy appetites he developed because he was chasing desires unchallenged.
All right.
And a monster was formed. Now, some of that might have been upbringing. Maybe he was abused by some neighbor or friend or...
Sure, God, anybody.
Who knows, right?
Family member, whatever.
Yeah, sure. All of us have trauma in our life. All of us, right? And that trauma affects us in ways we don't like to acknowledge. And it can be for the good or...
For the bad.
For the bad.
Yeah.
To some degree, it's shaping us. What you're doing, again, when you make Christ your Lord, is you're saying, you know what? I want you to shape me.
I think that is a very fair point, though, because I remember growing up, if somebody, not in a mean and hurtful, spiteful way, would tell me, oh, you just won't be able to do that because you can't see. It would be like my mission to do it, just to prove you wrong. So I get the, when you say we have desires, I feel like in some areas of my life, by default, I'm incredibly dependent upon others. And then as a result of that, in other areas of my life, I have this probably somewhat over-dramatized or over-necessity need to be independent in some areas because of the dependence by default that I have in the other areas of my life that are kind of unavoidable.
I think where you're getting hung up is that all of us have good desires and we have bad desires. Not every desire you have is bad.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it goes back to what we were saying before. The difference is how we judge those desires. There's got to be a standard.
Sure.
Right? And so you've got to compare those desires to that objective standard. And if you don't do that, then any desire is acceptable and fine and pursue it. But when there's a standard of right and wrong, independent of you and how you feel, it's like, wait a second, that's unhealthy, that's destructive, and I'm not going to feed that.
And that's exactly what I would do, is I had no standard
right.
for my desires. And that's a great way to put it.
And you were trying to get it through your friends who did have one.
Sometimes I would use those desires and do good things, but then I would have that same energy towards not good things. I had no standard of, you know, wait a minute, is this a good idea?
The argument today of this very thing we're talking about, where we see people embracing these destructive lifestyles, I mean, horrifically so, is they say, I was born this way. Like, I was born with these desires, and so they're not wrong. And I'm free to pursue them, because after all, I can be anything I
want to be. Even though we're told that we're literally born into sin.
Well, we are. We're born with our eyes wide open. And unfortunately, in that, we gravitate toward what's wrong. We do like what's right, but we also gravitate toward things that are wrong. We just do.
Mm-hmm.
There is right and wrong, and we want to hold both of them, sometimes equally, sometimes not. But
yeah, no, I agree.
You know, so, and I think it's also why we often try and balance that. We try and outdo the bad in us with good. We're trying to play that scale game.
Mm.
And again, that's why it's so hard when you come to Christ, as you realize.
Also something I'm guilty of.
You know, well, you realize that, and it's kind of hard to accept. You know, you're not going to earn your way there. You're not going to do enough good to outweigh the bad you've done in your life. You are saved because of the goodness of Christ and what he gave you.
Right. You're saved by the faith you have and the grace he gave you.
Yeah, and the exchange he did at the cross for you. In other words, you were unsavable on your own. You never could work hard enough or fast enough to outpace.
That's a hard concept to swallow, though, especially in the way of our society, because that's how our society really is structured. That the better you do, the harder you work. Well, maybe not so much in the current day, but in the past, it's very much you put the time and the effort in, you're going to see the rewards for your success, right?
Right. But that's not, we're talking what makes for a good society, not for what saves you.
I just mean, though, it's hard to separate that. You got that remember.
System. Yeah, you have that system.
To I can't do enough good to earn God's favor.
Earn favor or salvation. But there is a direct result in the good that we do or evil that affects society, right? And the people around us. So mm-hmm. when we choose to do and make right decisions, again, to that independent, objective, set, perfected standard, when we live and function that way, and we spend 90% of our time there and only 10% saying, God, forgive me and help me get it right, we make for a better life, a better world.
Sure. And obviously a better surrounding.
Right. Everyone benefits that way. But when you make it 90% bad
and 10% good,
maybe 10% good,
you look see at what you get. America today.
And that's our inversion, right? Yeah. It's so I know this. We all want to grow, but are we willing to sacrifice and suffer to achieve that outcome? It's not free. Growth isn't free. It comes at a cost. I think most of us live with the question, externalizing it. We say, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Instead of asking the better question,
what's wrong with me?
What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me?
As always, this has been Blindly Obvious. If we can see it, you can see it too. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes, as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here, and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. Peace, love, and God bless. Remember, the eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
It's Blindly Obvious, baby.